The biggest thing was how to maximize the revenue, because unit configuration maximizes your revenues. For instance, in a more affluent community, they're willing to pay a higher price per square foot for larger lockers. In a less affluent community, they're willing to pay a higher price per square foot for smaller lockers.
This is the naked truth about real estate investing. Your host, Javier, has already been through all the brain damage of this business, so you don't have to go through it. That way, you're not exposed to all of the risk of losing your shirt or getting caught with your pants down. So let's dive into another No BS episode right now.
Hello, everybody. This is Javier Hinojo, your host of The Naked Truth About Real Estate Investing. Today, I have Scott Krohn. A couple of things we're going to talk about is a whole bunch of stuff, actually. He does self-storage, talking about ground-up construction. We're going to talk about doing a conversion, right? Buying some five-story buildings and turning them into self-storage, or even buying some existing self-storage. Why he likes self-storage, he went through the crash of 2008, 2009. So that's when he started transitioning over to self-storage. He's got a lot of cool information. You got to listen to the Naked Truth for Lead as well. It's pretty interesting. But here, Scott, I'll let you just tell us a little bit more about you.
Well, first of all, thanks for having me. I appreciate your time. So I began in real estate, graduating from college and got my master's in architecture. And my professor owned a real estate development, architecture, and contracting company that specialized in multifamily. And so as his TA, he had me working in his office and then also in real life projects. So my master's thesis was a 400-unit, $100 million project that we worked on. I worked with him for 6 years on it, 3 years in class, and then 3 years after I graduated. And then I started my own firm at because I thought I knew everything at 28. And so I started my own firm, and we were a development design build firm, predominantly in the residential side. We were both single family and then multifamily mixed use until the crash came. And that's when, you know, the whole market was pushed towards multifamily. And, you know, I saw some huge cap compressions. And so we began looking at self-storage, and I really studied it and saw that over the last four recessions, self-storage never went below 90% occupancy and continued to perform. And so I sold off the multifamily, and we've been developing self-storage and owning and managing. And now we even have our own self-storage brand, One-Stop Self-Storage.
All right. You hit a lot of points here that I want to hit. So I said 20 minutes, 25 minutes. I go, we're going to go like 3 hours. All right. Perfect. Sounds like fun. Sounds like fun. All right. So first architect that I have on the show, so which is cool. You're from Chicago, wearing a Louisville Bats hat. So before we talk about all this cool stuff, self-storage, tell me about the hat.
Well, we like to give a shout out to our neighbors. And so the latest facility which we are developing in Louisville is just down the street from the Louisville Bats. And so I like to give a shout out to our neighbor and support them as they endeavor on their 2022 summer campaign. So most of our facilities are near either baseball fields, minor league baseball fields, or other things along those lines, like we have or universities. So we have Marquette University, we have the Brewers Field in Milwaukee, we have the Toledo Mud Hens in Toledo, we have the Dayton Flyers and the Dayton baseball team just a couple blocks from our building. And so we always end up buying facilities near baseball fields and colleges.
Awesome. Super cool. Shout out to the Louisville Bats, and hopefully they have a great season. All right, so let's back up now. I have not interviewed a lot of people on the show that have been through the 2008 crash, right? So you noticed, you know, you were doing single family, you're doing some multifamily, kind of saw the shift, right? I mean, there were so many distress, so many bad loans out there, people losing their shirt. And one of the things that I've also noticed when you hit it, self-storage did well, right? They did well through 2008. I saw a stat somewhere that said that self-storage has the least default rate of any commercial asset as far as a loan. Is that true, or did I misread it somewhere?
No, you read it. It's the most resilient. And so a lot of people have deemed it recessionary proof. I don't think there's anything that is proof, you know, like a proof in real estate, but I call it recessionary resistant. So it does the best in a recessionary market. I was fortunate enough that I began seeing the tea leaves beforehand. And so I sold off a lot of our single family at that point in time before the 2008-2009 crash. And so I was only sitting on two properties at that point in time, and we were able to move them. And that's when we first transitioned to doing a lot of design build work. And then we also began acquiring notes and also multifamily at that point in time. But we just ultimately, after all those endeavors, we thought that self-storage was the best venue for us going forward.
Cool. Next question I'm going to ask, we're going to go compare multifamily to self-storage, and then we're going to hit your development, your brand, and a couple of questions on that side. So tell me self-storage versus multifamily. So tell me like the pros, cons of each.
Well, a lot of people tell me that they understand multifamily, but they don't get self-storage, which really blows my mind because to me, we're doing the same thing. We're renting a box. It's just multifamily has more features in that box. They have a kitchen, they have bathrooms, they have bedrooms. Self-storage is an apartment without a box. It's the most simplistic version of an apartment. So we don't, you know, like what I like to say is it's apartments without toilets. And so it is, because it's a lot more simplistic, our operating expenses are typically 25 to 35% of cost versus multifamily, which is 55%, 50 to 55%. And we don't have a lot of the eviction or laws that a lot of multifamily, depending on which state you are, you know, here in Chicago, it's very onerous to be a multifamily owner. All the laws are favored towards the tenants, but within self-storage, it's a lot more simplistic. It is a retail business compared to multifamily. And so we can go in and we can do a market study to see how much demand is unmet. And that's how we know where to go into. So we can build in very specific locations based upon supply and demand. When we were doing multifamily, it was sort of like the field of dreams. We'd, you know, lick your finger, feel the breeze and say, you know, if you build it, they will come. You know, it was a lot harder to predict what the modeling was going to be. Self-storage, it's a lot more simplistic.
Okay. What would you say if somebody was going to jump into commercial asset, right? They were doing single family, right? And they were going to jump into, a lot of people think like, hey, I need to wholesale some single family, right? Then I need to buy and fix and flip some single family, or maybe I need to buy some single family rental. Then I need to buy some multifamily. And then maybe I buy a warehouse, or then maybe I buy a self storage. What do you say to people who say they have to go through that progression? Should they go through that progression, or can they just, you know, connect with somebody and start buying self storage per se?
I know that's taught a lot. And a lot of people, there's a lot of programs out there that really teach that. And I have coached real estate and people are like, well, I have to do this. And I'm like, well, why do you feel you have to do this? And they're like, well, that's what we were taught. But I'm like, but what do you like to do? So if you don't like to do those things, then why do you want to do them? So what I always taught was, what do you like to do? What is your background? What are you good at doing? And then from there, build what you want to do as opposed to what you feel you have to do. And so that is how we've modeled what we've done at Coda. We've always gone in the direction of what we wanted to do based upon what the market was presenting, as opposed to what I felt, you know, someone was telling me that we had to do.
All right. Perfect. That's I love that answer. I love that answer. I guess you mentioned there your brand, Dakota.
We have three companies. One is Coda okay. Design Build, which is our development and design build firm. Then we have Coda Management Group, which is our investment holding company that where we manage the self-storage assets. And then we have one-stop self-storage, which actually is the interface with customers on the self-storage side.
One-stop self-storage. Okay. And Correct. Where is that majorly, like around Chicago or all over the country? Well, you didn't mention
different locations. Yeah, we have Milwaukee. So, yeah. We have Chicago, Jackson, Michigan. We have Toledo, Ohio, Dayton, Ohio, Louisville, and Ellsworth, Maine. And then we also are part owners of a facility in Lynchburg, Virginia.
Okay, perfect. Awesome. And what are you guys buying? Are you guys just building from ground up, or you're buying existing or doing a transformation of a building? I'm not sure what the terminology is. Are you buying existing? Are you taking a Kmart, turning into a self storage, or are you building brand new, or a combination?
We're doing yes.
Okay, there you go.
So right. The last one we just bought is Jackson, Michigan, and that was an existing facility. And what we did is we bought it. It was all managed out of a notepad with a dumb phone, text messages, and a notepad. And we're automating the whole system. We're coming in, raising rents, getting it back up to market level. And that's all we're doing. We're actually working on a new development, which will be a climate-controlled RV and boat, and also in Michigan. But a lot of our portfolio is buying existing underperforming commercial buildings and converting them into self-storage in more urban areas.
Okay, perfect.
So Chicago was the original Lincoln Log Factory. Milwaukee was the first fireproof building in Milwaukee. We had medical warehouse in Toledo and an empty, you know, five-story building in Dayton.
Oh, that is awesome. That is awesome. Now, what is your favorite to do? Which project?
Well, they all have, I mean, for me, I don't really have much, there wasn't much creativity in our Jackson project. There was no development. There was no expansion. Comparatively, when I'm designing a single family home or multifamily or anything else, there's a lot more involved with it. I can design a self-storage facility in about an hour. It doesn't really take me that long because it's a much more simplistic model. Where's the sales office? Where do we do? What's more critical is the configuration, the unit configuration of the lockers. You know, how many 5x5s, how many 5x10s, how many 10x10s, because that will ultimately dictate our revenue. So that is more of the design feature in that. But I mean, I really like our Dayton project. It's a gorgeous old brick building. I love the history of our Lincoln Log factory. You know, they each have a special place in our hearts based upon, you know, what they are. But I will say the one in Louisville was and I told our bankers this, it was the ugliest building that we ever bought. And it was an old candy factory, and it's going to be undergoing a massive renovation. So it's going to be half flex warehouse and then half self-storage.
So let me ask you this question. What is the most challenging part of taking an existing building and turning it into a four-story, climate-controlled, you know, self-storage facility? What do you think is the most challenging?
Circulation.
Okay.
You know, so for instance, our building in Milwaukee, it had a loading dock on the second floor. And so, you know, then you're dealing with two different levels. So self-storage, everybody wants to be on one level so that you can take a cart and roll your stuff to your locker. So, you know, we were just looking at a building in Cleveland, and inside the building, there's three steps, you know, two places where there's three steps. Well, you know, no one wants to carry stuff up and down three steps. So, you know, how we address circulation, how we make sure that we're all on the same level, elevators, making sure that the elevators are code compliant, and that varies from state to state. So that's the biggest challenge is circulation.
Circulation. Now, let me ask you this question. Like, if I walk up to a 20 unit apartment building, and I can pretty much look at the building, I can tell, okay, it costs this much. I can kind of see the unit mix, and I can check the rents, right? And then I can just do a quick math. I can do it in 5 minutes. You know, I can be like, okay, boom, boom, boom. This is worth, as it sits, is worth 3 million. But once I up the rents, it's worth 7, and I might be all in for 4.5. I can tell that, you know, I can give a ballpark in a few minutes. Can you do the same thing? You can do the same thing with a self-standing self-storage, but can you do that with when you're going to turn a Kmart into a self-storage facility, you know, do a conversion, right? Can you do that? Can you say, hey, I need to be under $40 a square foot per purchase, has to get, you know, good working mechanicals or something? Is there like a rule of thumb?
Yeah, there definitely are. I mean, when we are buying existing buildings, we're always trying to be below replacement costs. So like Dayton, we bought for $11 per square foot. I can't build a poured in place concrete with a masonry exterior building.
Yeah.
That's five stories, you know, in one story below grade for, you know, $11 a square foot. I just can't do that. So when we're looking at it, you know, a new one will be around 60. Well, I mean, these are all, let's just call it pre COVID and all the supply chain and all those issues and construction costs, which I think are going to start coming back down, because I think we're going to be hitting recession here pretty soon. But so let's just say pre, you know, cost inflation, you know, a new building would be around $65 a square foot. We're looking to be all in between like 40 and $50. So, you know, if they're at 60 to 70, you know, we have a $20 per square foot cost advantage. So that makes it easier for our pricing.
Oh, for sure. Awesome. Right. Unless you're like in a great location right downtown where you can charge a bunch of money on your rents, right?
That's different. Well, I mean, right? our Dayton project, our Toledo and Milwaukee, they're all in the downtown areas. But that's again, nice. If we're in downtown Chicago or San Francisco, at that point, the real estate becomes too expensive. You know, it's you can't make the revenues work.
Yeah. I've seen some of these in a high couple of hundreds, you know, square feet. I'm like, oh my gosh, like three, four.
Well, that's our average size is around 90, 100 you know? Square feet.
Yeah, they're pretty large. My next question would be, when you buy an existing facility, right? So a new development, that's pretty much just the process of doing all the paperwork, the planning, and that goes, and that one's done. But as far as buying an existing facility, right? Like the one you say you bought in Jackson, right? You say you bought one in...
It was an existing facility in Jackson.
Jackson. What are the first... You guys said you were working on it with a notepad and a flip phone. And I've had sellers that had, you know, a 50 unit apartment building, 100 unit apartment building, give me like a hefty bag full of leases and receipts and stuff, right? Like they run a business this way because they're mom and pop. So what is one of the first things you guys look at to fix that on an existing facility that you take over? What are the first few things you start doing?
Well, the first thing was he literally had a mail slot in the side of one of the units and then a vault bolted to the ground, to the concrete. And people would, you know, depositing their rent checks and their cash into this mail slot. And nice.
I'm just saying like nice.
So the first thing we did is we told everybody that we're going automated. You have to pay online. You know, if you don't, then we're going to charge you more because we're not going to be in every day. People were putting money in there. So, you know, we're not going to be driving to Jackson, Michigan every day to go collect 10 checks of $40. Right.
Yep.
And so there's over 300 units there. And so we wanted everybody to get online. And so we created an incentive program for them to be making all their payments online. And then all their contracts are online, all the renewals, all their notifications. We're doing all that digitally now. So that's the first thing that we did. And then the second thing we're doing, we're in the process of doing right now, is putting a keypad on the gate and have an automatic gate. So anytime someone goes into the facility, they have to enter their code and we know that they're entering the facility.
Oh, that is super cool. That's definitely automation. I love that. You know, not very labor intensive. And if you can, you know, the biggest cost of pretty much almost every business is your overhead, your labor. You know, it's manpower, payroll, right?
Right.
And it's one of the things that I love about self-storage is, man, I don't have any self-storage. Like I said before the interview at Lock On Wood, I have my first one next month. In August, hopefully we get our first one and I'm definitely looking forward to it. How to, you know, fully automate it. I want to see the process, right? I've done some heavy value add in apartment buildings, you know, bought a 200 unit apartment building with 40% occupancy and had to turn every tenant and took us about a year and a half, right? That's a lot of brain damage. So, you know, compare it to a self-storage, I think to myself, man, it's similar, like you said, but I think it's a lot less work, but we shall find out, right?
It's different work, right?
I'm
not going to say it's a lot less, it's just different work. I'm not getting calls in the middle of the night about, you know, my toilet being clogged because I had a really good night and I came home and put something in the toilet. But it is a retail business and you got to be on top of it. So, you know, you got to make sure that you're hitting your sales, you're hitting your quotas, you're all those sorts of things.
So tell me, Scott, what do you do now for your company? What do you do?
I oversee the development and the strategic planning of the company. So when we first get, like, for instance, the project that we were looking at Cleveland, we got a call, hey, can you come take a look at this building? I want to convert it into self-storage. So we flew out to Cleveland and looked at this building. And so part of my job is, one, making sure financially it makes sense. And then two, design-wise, it makes sense. And then three, on a construction size, will it make sense? And that's where I bring in our director of construction to, you know, work with us in terms of the cost side. But when I'm designing something, I'm also looking at the constructability of it. And also from, you know, how much is this going to cost us? So I'll give a handout to the owner. He's never done it before. He's never done self-storage before. And, you know, he did a lot of his own research. He's a successful business person. And I would say that he took the process to about 70%, which is a lot further than a lot of, you know, our other customers or clients or people that we've worked with have done, because he understood business. He understood multifamily, but he just didn't have the last component. But in addition, the biggest thing was how to maximize the revenue, because unit configuration maximizes your revenues. So for instance, in a more affluent community, they're willing to pay a higher price per square foot for larger lockers. In a less affluent community, they're willing to pay a higher price per square foot for smaller lockers. So in a less affluent community, you have to have a lot of smaller lockers versus a bunch of big ones, and that will alter your revenue dramatically. So, you know, we asked him if he had done that research and he had not, but then he had like these really huge units because he thought people would want them, but that's not really what the market will dictate, but that would impact his revenue.
Yeah. So that, you know, I've noticed that some facilities that we do some underwriting, they'll have a lot of 10 by 20s or 20 by 20s.
Mm-hmm.
And the market seems, you go look at the competition and there's a lot of 10 by 10s, you know, like everybody has majority 10 by 10s. Okay, great. And their large ones are filled and nobody has 10 by 10s all over, like, you know, within a 2-3 mile radius, 5 mile radius, they're all booked up. They're all leased up. So that's awesome, right? Doing some market research, just like, you know, your single family, like your multifamily, there's still market research to be done. And it's fairly easy, Scott, right? I mean, I think it's fairly easy. You can just call their competitors on the phone or check their websites a lot of the time.
Three things. We do what you talk about. We have software that we can log into that will give us market research. And then we also hire feasibility studies.
Yeah, that's my next question.
So between all three of them, you know, those are how we determine what the market is. So we don't rely just on one.
So tell me about a feasibility study. What does that cost in general?
Well, it depends, you know, where it is, if they haven't been there, if they're familiar with the market. But, you know, our range is, you know, call it $5,000 to maybe $10,000, depending on their, you know, if they have to fly or someplace. But, you know, it's important for us to have because it's something that the banks require, it's something that the appraisers require. And, you know, it gives third party verification that this project is viable.
Yeah. Yeah, that's awesome. A lot of people don't want to spend an extra $5,000-$10,000, but it's better to spend the extra $10,000 than lose a few hundred or a few million, you know?
Oh, for sure. So, I mean, you know, I was talking with this woman who I was at a conference, and, you know, she's like, well, I have these 10 acres in Austin, Texas, and I was going to put it, you know, self-storage in it. I'm like, well, have you done a feasibility study to see what the competition is? She goes, no, I figured I'd do that after the fact. And they would tell me what to build. And I said, well, yeah, you know, I'll do a quick study for you and I'll let you know. So supply and demand is around 7 square feet of lockers per capita is where supply typically equals demand. Now in Texas, Florida, the East Coast, it's rising up to maybe 9. In Florida, it's all the way up to 13.
Wow.
At her location, she had 24 self-storage facilities within 3 miles.
Oh my goodness.
And I was like, whatever you do, do not build self-storage here. You'll never lease it up.
Yeah, just not enough demand. For sure.
Exactly. There's like too much supply, right?
Yep. Yep. Yeah, definitely. Scott, man, this has been really good. And I got a list of, I still have like 80 questions. So I want to have you back on the show. But
my pleasure.
Yeah. One of the things, so how does somebody, like, how do you put this project together? Right. So talk to me a little bit about that, right? You guys a private equity firm, you just stroke a check. I mean, how do you guys put this together?
We have three ways in which we structure deals. I mean, people hire us to just come and develop them for them. And then we have ones where we JV, like the one in Michigan, the one we're working on right now, the new one. Someone brought the property to us. It's raw land and said, hey, I've never done a development before. Can you help me out? I want to partner with you guys. And the other ones are where we find the property and we raise money and then we structure the whole deal.
Awesome. So if somebody wants to know more about your company, about what you got, you know, your previous projects, anything that you guys have, you know, just anything about your company, what's the best email for them to get you or a website? How do they get in contact with you?
I appreciate you asking. The website would be CODA, CODAMG for management group.com. And they can email us at info@CODAMG.com.
CODA, Kilo, Oscar, Delta, Alpha.
No, Mike. Charlie, Oscar, Delta, Alpha.
Charlie, Oscar. CODA with C. Okay.
Right.
So it's Charlie, Oscar, Delta. Okay. Charlie, Oscar, Delta, Alpha, Mike, Golf.
Exactly.
info@CODAMG.com. And they can send some information or go to CODAMG.com to check out the website. Anybody out there want to learn some more about self-storage, they're interested in anything they got coming up, see how they structure their projects, feel free to hit up Scott, right?
Well, what and, I'd like to offer your community is if they reference the show and if they say $1 billion, then what we'll do is we'll send them a feasibility study of one of our past projects and they can see why we chose that market. But it also talks about the self-storage industry as a whole. It's like a 175-page document. And then also we will send them a self-storage deal analyzer so they can plug in some assumptions and see how the property will do.
Oh, that is awesome. So I'm going to be the first one to log in for that, right? I would encourage everybody, all the listeners to, if you have a social media account, you have a Facebook or a company Twitter or Instagram, anything like that, Scott?
We do. We're on Facebook, CODAMG.
Great. Yeah. Cool. Just go ahead. As soon as I'm done here, we're going to actually, when we're done, before you get off, I'm going to go and follow you guys on Facebook. I'm going to sign up on your website because I really appreciate your spending some time with the show. And definitely want to get some of that feasibility study and get a solid. Hey, I can't have enough underwriting tools. I can tell you that.
Happy to send it over to you.
I got a 17-year-old daughter that she already wants to take over the business and she wants me to retire. I'm like, honey, hold on. Not yet. I'm not ready. I'm not ready. So she's my underwriter. Believe it or not, she does pretty amazing job. So
that is awesome.
So Scott, this brings me to my favorite part of the show. Oh, just like Scott mentioned, just mention either $1 billion boardroom or the Naked Truth. Just mention podcast and he will send you guys this information. All right. So we got this roulette, which is called the Naked Truth Roulette. We're going to find out if Scott Krohn from Chicago, who's wearing a Louisville Bats hat, who does self-storage, who's an architect. Let's make sure he's not a robot and he's a real person because he looks like he's got his shit together. And we do curse in this show. This is the first time I don't curse in my show. But we're going to ask you just three random questions. Got nothing to do with real estate. And I'm not going to give you a pass. You got to answer every question that I give you. So here we go. First question.
All right. Let's roll. I love it.
First question for Scott on the Naked Truth Roulette. And let's see what we got.
I feel like question I'm on Wheel of one. Fortune here.
There we go. All right. Let's see. All right. If you could pick another time to live in, when would it be? Either the future or the past? When would it be?
Wow. That's a hard one. I think looking back, it's hard to predict what's going to be in the future. I think the future is going to be, I can't imagine how crazy it's going to be based upon what's really happening and the changes since I've, you know, been alive. But I think the 50s would have been an interesting time to live, you know, post-war, and just the development and the growth in America, and how new things were coming online. I think the 50s and 60s would have been an interesting time.
Well, that's a great time, Scott, because the cars were cool. The clothes was cool. Everybody was skinny, and you had milkshakes and cheeseburgers. That's what it seemed like, right? Everybody,
and there were 5 cents.
Right? Cheeseburgers, Coca-Cola, milkshakes, hot dogs, french fries. Everybody was thin. Anyways, right. That's what it looks like when I see all the pictures. So great, great time. 1950s. Awesome. All right. Great. Second question for Scott Crone.
I like to buy a vowel. Can I buy a vowel?
You can buy a vowel for sure. Let's see what we got here. All right. Let's see. Second question is, there is a zombie apocalypse. What 3 famous people would you want on your team?
Oh, William Wallace. That's for sure. William Wallace.
All right.
Who else? Eisenhower. He Eisenhower. Was a stud. And it's an apocalypse, right? So
yep.
I'm also going to have to say Grogan, the SEAL, 30 days with a SEAL. Grogan.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Heck yeah.
I want some awesome warriors, right? If I'm going to be dealing with the zombie apocalypse, I want some warriors.
Yeah, that's really good. Last time I had this question, I gave an answer, and my wife was standing right outside my office, and I got in trouble. So I said, we have to repopulate the world. So I had to pick Scarlett Johansson, Jessica Alba, and Gail Gadot. Those are 3 team members I wanted in my
team. You took it in a team. Different direction. You took expansion. Hey, I took about making sure I
survival, right? You were survival. I was expansion. You know, hey, look, it could work both ways, right?
You got to
protect, you know? I definitely got in trouble for that. Anyways.
That's an inside thought, right? Not an outside thought.
Yeah, and it was definitely outside. So, all right. Perfect. That's why I've been married almost 25 years, because I think my wife knows me very well. All right. Last question for Scott.
Oh,
look at this. What is the craziest thing you sneaked into a movie theater?
Oh, it's going to be really boring. I don't really sneak too many things into a movie theater. So it's usually food, you know,
food. What kind of food?
Like candy, you know, I'm opposed to paying for, you know, $12 for a box of candy. So, you know, we'd have the kids, put candy in their pockets and go in, you know?
Hey, look, I got 5 kids, man. And it's, you know, $4 a bag of M&Ms, and everybody wanted one. I'm like, man, that's, you know, it was like $20 plus the sodas. It was, you know, it was $50 for the movies, and then, you know, $120 for the snacks. So
exactly.
I definitely understand. That's why I used to love going to the movies next to a Target, and we'll go to Target, you know, stock up on everything.
That's why we go to movies in November, because we have all the Halloween candy from October.
Exactly. I started carrying a Merce, you know, a man purse. I carried a Merce. Start throwing everything in there. There you go.
As long as it wasn't a fanny pack.
There you go. It was not a fanny pack. Scott, you survived the Naked Truth Roulette.
Appreciate it.
Thanks for being a good sport and answering these questions. And I love these questions. Actually, it is my favorite part of the show, because, you know, we have right now, we have about 12,000 downloads every single month. And I appreciate everybody listening and downloading the podcast. And, you know, a lot of folks out there, you know, they're in real estate. Some are starting in real estate. Some are really big into real estate. And they really got to understand that we're just normal people. Well, maybe not normal, because people like us sometimes aren't really normal, but, you know, we're just like everybody else, right? We got a sense of humor, you know, we got a family, we got our ups and downs, and we're still real people, right? They see, look, Scott's buying 100,000 square feet, you know, rentable square feet units or conversion and all that. Yes, it's great, but we're still all people. And, you know, we have a life outside of what we do. And I appreciate you sharing some insight into your outside of real estate. How about that?
I appreciate it. These are great questions. I had a great time.
Thank you, Scott. Anything else you'd like to let the audience know before I let you go?
No, I think you covered a wide breadth of topics there. So,
Yeah, we did, for sure.
Enjoy being back. Whenever you would like to have me back, I'd be happy to do that.
Oh, that's awesome. So, Scott, appreciate you being on the show. I am Javier Hinojo, your host. Don't lose your shirt. Just as promised, I like to give out free stuff, some tools and tips that's actually helped me in my business. There's nothing out there like getting some free stuff that people have spent a lot of time, energy in putting together. It's like a referral. Somebody asked me for an electrician. You don't know what kind of brain damage I had to go through to give you this good referral for an electrician. You got to appreciate referrals from people, okay? Because they went through a lot to find that one good person. So I'm going to give you my due diligence template for buying apartment buildings. It's attached to monday.com. It is an affiliate link, so they're going to send me a kickback. Not a lot, but a little bit. But you can either download it as an Excel, or you can put it on monday.com. Monday.com is pretty cool because it's a project management platform software. It's super cool. I use it all the time for my social media, for my team, tracking deals, doing tasks for everybody. It's actually pretty good. You can track construction. It's a project management platform. It's really cool. Monday, like the day, monday.com. So my due diligence checklist is there for free for you.
This has been The Naked Truth. Our mission is to give it to you raw. If you got value from this episode, you're invited to leave an honest written review and share this episode with a friend. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you on the next episode.